welcome to episode 17 of the Reading Cokes podcast. If you're a book lover who may be interested in joining our online book club, please visit our website at thereadingcove.com. For May 2012, we're discussing Whistling in the Dark by Leslie Kagan. So hi, I'm Millennia, the co-founder, and I'm from Florida.
I'm Roberta, and I'm one of the co-moderators, and I'm from Georgia.
I'm Monica. I'm a member from Nebraska.
And hello, ladies. We're gathered here today to discuss Whistling in the Dark by Leslie Kagan. It's our 138th pick, and it was chosen by Cove member Nancy. And for the most part, everybody seems to really have liked it a lot. How about you guys?
Well, I enjoyed... I'm sorry. Go ahead, Monica.
I thought there was kind of a lot going on. Too much going on.
You mean like towards the end?
Well, like, even just throughout the book, there's like, you've got the children's kidnapper and molester, you got the girl's father who died, the mother who's sick, their drunk father, you got the neighbors, and like all the neighbors is in their stories, and the fact that she was, I mean, there's just so much stuff going on.
Yeah.
Well, I said that there was a lot going on, but sometimes I like stories where there's a lot of interconnected stories, and more so than it seemed like a few of things I read recently besides this book, there was like too much concentration on too few events. You kept going back and forth in time and just concentrating on a small snippet of consequences for certain actions. So I guess you have to kind of weigh one against the other about either too much to keep up with or not enough.
Right. I enjoyed it in the beginning, the first part of the book. I liked, it was charming. I liked the nostalgia. I felt the setting was really well done. And I felt like I was in, you know, Milwaukee 1959 and running around this neighborhood with these little girls. And so I really liked her. I thought she was funny. I thought she was, you know, I laughed out loud a few times. I liked all the references to the popular culture of the time, all the music and the movies and stuff like that. And, you know, I was just really concerned for them because, you know, the book opens with the fact that people are locking their doors now because there's a murder and molester and a couple of little girls have been killed and kidnapped and raped and killed or whatever. And yet everybody's just, you know, allowed to be roaming the streets. And I'm like, well, if they're locking their doors, why are they allowing their children to be out there, you know, when there's a madman out there?
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand either, because my mom was a little girl during the Charles Starkweather thing. And I think they locked down the schools. Like they canceled school. They had everybody lock their door. Nobody was going out of their house.
And it wasn't like people weren't aware of it, because that's why they started locking their doors. But would they really be still allowing all the children to be just on their own out there in the neighborhood like that? I just thought that was a little weird, because under the circumstances.
It seemed like nobody really cared. I mean, they locked their doors, but yet they were living life like it was...
Like
everything
it wasn't
was
a big
okay.
deal. Yeah, like, oh, just let's try to figure out who the murder molester is. Because Sally and True kind of, and the rest of their little gang there, they were just like making a little game of it or something. It was funny. And even that aside, I really did not like True. Did you guys like True?
I thought she was older than 7.
Well, she was 9. Sally's 10, and she's like... like a year apart or whatever.
But yeah, Sally seemed a little bit precocious and had her own charm that mainly True was sort of annoying. It's like the annoying younger sister that you just have to tolerate.
She was so obnoxious. And it's like in many ways she seemed more mature than Sally and a little more all-knowing. And Sally seemed a bit more naive and, you know, just her imagination runs wild and she just knows that the murder is going to come after her and all this stuff. Whereas, you know, True's like telling her, oh, please, you know, she's like rolling her eyes every time she brings it up.
Yeah, I said, well, that's why I thought that Sally was a bit more naive. And even though she got scared about these things at the same time, that she still lived in a very childlike, you know, world, even with all these terrible things going on. And I said, I think I'm, even though I'm getting older, I'm a little bit younger than the author was when this happens. But it seemed like in the late 50s and early 60s, a lot of people, at least the ones I knew, we led sort of a charmed life that my parents let me do a lot of things that I sure never let my children do.
Right.
That my son was born not long after the whole Adam Walsh thing. Mm-hmm. And besides taking a while to have a child, it took me a while to get pregnant. You kind of become more like what they call now the helicopter moms. You want to protect your children. So I didn't let my children do like probably 80% of what I was allowed to do. It wasn't like I ran wild, but I had pretty open rein. I could, as long as I was home, you know, at a certain time, my mom was fine with it. I mean, I could walk the half a mile to the 7-Eleven. I could ride my bike to the bookmobile. I could go out and play kick the can and other things with my friends in the neighborhood.
Yeah, just like Sally and True and their friends of the neighborhood.
Their friends. That's I can relate to that because I was, like I said, I was allowed to do that because there wasn't this fear of someone was going to grab you and do something horrible.
Exactly. But would your parents have allowed that if there were two girls in the neighborhood
who got missing and were murdered? No.
Yeah, it just didn't fit.
No, and not at all.
Those two things seem to really not make the story make a whole lot of sense. But I still followed it. I still enjoyed, for the most part, Sally's view of things. By the middle, it did start to get a little boring for me, and I was like waiting for the next, okay, or what's the next thing that's going to happen? When's this going to take another turn? It seemed to be indulging in the nostalgic aspect quite a bit, just going around and, you know, the friends and her observations and her suspicions, and then that other thing that happened with her being chased by the person and then she fell asleep under the bushes. I was like, what?
Crazy. Well, I mean, yeah, I think that was one of these points where you felt like you had to sort of suspend disbelief, so to speak, but it was part of the story. But I agree, it could have been handled a little bit different. I probably would have given it, you know, an even higher grade if some of these little things. But you have to allow a little bit of thing to work into the story to make the author turn out the way they want it to also.
Yeah, and I can understand I'm not saying that's not something that could have happened. I'm just saying, just the idea that, of course, their mother's in the hospital. She's sick. She's left her oldest daughter in charge of them. Nell was not taking very good care of them at all.
No.
The stepfather was your, you know, stock, drunk, mean stepfather who wasn't around. And when he was just a mean drunk.
Right.
But yet, here they are, you know, trying to find dinner, traipsing through the neighborhood looking for food. And they decide to spend the night over at this person's house. Then she decides to get up in the middle of the night and go home. And then this crazy person is chasing her and she doesn't tell anybody. And she falls asleep under the bushes and she doesn't... I mean, I don't know. A 10-year-old wouldn't tell anybody that something like that had happened and then have the police come out and all that stuff. I don't know.
That was a little strange. But yeah, most of 10-year-olds would probably go running and screaming to somebody.
She would have been screaming on the street that night when the person was chasing her.
I would have.
I would imagine any, a 10-year-old who could scream would be screaming and running.
Exactly.
I don't see how this went down so quietly, you know, for her to go hide and, you know, I don't know. So that part. But then when things started happening, boy, did they start happening. Like Monica said, there was so much. All the secrets with True having been the one who caused the accident that made their father die. And the uncle was blackmailing Helen.
Right.
I was like, oh my God.
but I can see how that could happen. You know, that could have... That seemed very true to life to me, that things like that unfortunately do happen.
And that's, I don't understand after the dad died, why she just didn't marry the police officer. I mean, he would have been a much better choice than some drunk.
Well, they said it was pride. It was her pride that she was too proud to go back to him.
Right. Mm-hmm. She felt like she'd done the wrong thing even before and was afraid to go back to him after that.
Yeah. But, you know, what a big mistake that was.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he could have given her and her family a nice stable.
Exactly. That was exactly what she was looking for.
But, I mean, a lot of times, unfortunately, women do make mistakes about picking out men for all the wrong reasons.
Absolutely.
So that rang true to me, too, because you see that happen all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
That's very true. And then the children suffer as a result. Because exactly. here was Dave just dying to take care of them.
But he had to be quiet. He had to keep the secret because he didn't want to make things worse than they already were.
I know. And I thought that was well done, how, you know, he was watching them, but, you know, the reason for it, Sally's interpretation was, of course, all
that
wrong.
He was the bad guy.
Yeah, he was the murderer, molester, and, you know, really, it was because he knew this was his daughter, and, you know, he saw what was going on, and I'm sure he felt, you know, he wanted to do more.
And see, I wouldn't have minded that storyline. Just keep it. You have, you know, and her even thinking that the Rasmussen was the molester, but kind of getting rid of all the other side stories and maybe focusing more on how the affair happened and, you know, kind of backflashing and getting that story rather than, you know, because Wendy and her family
and them too.
And Dottie and her getting pregnant and loudmouth Susie or whatever her name was. I mean, there's just so many.
I think then you would probably be needing to take it out of Sally's point of view, you know, to get a lot of those details. Because it was already pushing it a little bit, keeping it within her point of view. You could tell that a lot of information it had to be, you know, within the context of what she would be in her awareness. So all that other, you know, information, you know, it's supposed to be from the 10-year-old's perspective of what's going on. And sometimes that felt a little uneven, I must say. Like, sometimes she felt like, you know, a college student. Did you guys get that too? Like, sometimes you could tell it was a 10-year-old perspective, and other times it just felt a lot older.
Right, right.
Especially on True's end. True would say some things that I was just like, really?
I mean, she's a little girl. Like, I would never talk like that. I didn't even know stuff like that at that age.
Yeah, and Sally was always using the word charitable. And I was just like, would a 10-year-old really be thinking the word charitable like that? Thinking, I don't know.
Well, see, it seemed like they'd been exposed to a lot more than most 10-year-olds would have been in that day and age, especially because you were a lot more sheltered. They didn't show everything there was to see on TV, and you didn't have access to a lot of other media.
That is true. And then there was Ethel, who was sort of, you know, like a little pseudo mom for them, which they really needed, because I felt like these girls are probably not bathing every day, and sure enough, she gets them and makes them bathe.
Right.
I was like, thank God for that.
Yeah, they were sort of living like little feral, you know, creatures sometimes.
Yeah.
It was sad
because
no one else, you know, really cared about them. You know, I said Nell was just off with her own things with Eddie and beauty school and everything else. And at the same time, you couldn't really expect her to. She had had that much training or knowledge about what to do with younger girls. So, and she had her own life to live. So, she was sort of irresponsible, but at the same time, you couldn't totally blame her because she just kind of got thrown into the situation.
I blame her for, she could have taken a little bit more initiative to make sure that her sisters were safe and bathed every day and ate something every day. I mean, those are just the basics.
That's true. I think the thing is too, I don't think they had much money either. That was the bad part.
Yeah, the father, Hal, wasn't giving money or something. There was something she said about groceries.
Right.
And he was drinking it all, so yeah, she didn't really have anything to work with.
Yeah.
So it made it tough for everybody at the you know, some, and poor Nell wasn't much of a cook either, because they made a point about her making some really yucky stuff. So I may not tell anybody if they want to listen to this before they take their quiz about the bad dish she made. But anyway,
yeah.
But I said,
she couldn't cook. We know she couldn't cook, but you know,
cook. No, her mom never taught her about cooking. That, but But I said, but yeah, I mean, there's other things she could have done better, but then she was limited in her resources too, so it was sort of a bad thing. So the children were lucky they had Ethel and the other, now my mind's straight, like the little Italian older.
Oh, yeah.
Nana?
Yeah,
Nana.
The lady and the landlady.
Right, right.
Mrs. Goldblum?
Something, Goldberg or...
Goldberg, yeah, the Jewish German.
Yeah.
But yeah, the other neighbors sort of took the kids in once they realized. I think at first maybe they didn't want to pry into their business, but once they realized they were sort of in dire straits, they sort of looked out for them some.
Yeah. Which, you know, was a godsend, because God knows what could have happened to them if they didn't have that.
That's right.
The part I enjoyed most was the nostalgic factor. But I do feel it was a little overindulged in that, and it got in the way of the progression of the plot, because you really wanted to know who this was going to turn out to be and how... Because I was suspecting Hal for a long time, because I'm thinking, how is this going to be relevant to Sally and True? You could tell that it was that's where it was going, that they were going to end up in this man's sight somehow. Or clutches.
Right.
So
right.
That wasn't a big surprise. So I wanted to continue to find that out, like where this was going to end up. And then when it finally was revealed, this Bobby guy, I was just like, it was underwhelming for me. I don't know about you guys.
It was a bit anticlimactic.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
But for a while, I suspected the guy that was coming from California was somebody's son or somebody's whoever who would come to visit from California.
Yeah, every so often. Yeah, that sort of was a red herring there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I suspected maybe it was him. I was wondering, and then I suspected Hal, but I immediately didn't think it was Dave, because, you know, that was too obvious.
And
like, Sally's wrong.
Police officer. I mean, what
well,
little kid
really
suspects...
difference, but...
but, I mean, even in the 50s, what child suspects a police officer of being...
Well, she does.
I mean, because now that, you know, now that I'm older, I know kind of more more corruption. But as a child, the police officers were the person you go to for help. And, you know, that's how my kids see them is, oh, the person you run to if you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So I guess her thinking that was just.
She just saw a whole lot of little suspicious reasons for why. He was it. Like, he was watching them when they were playing somewhere or whatever, and I don't know. She had some she had some support for why she believed so emphatically that it was him. And True was just always there, like, looking at her like she was just nuts. Nobody believes her, and, you know, I really, you know, like Sally at the beginning. I did. I thought she was funny.
She was. Yeah, she was. I said so. Even for a little girl, that she had the overactive imagination, and then her view of life in general was humorous.
Yeah. So, are you guys interested to check out Good Graces?
I'd like to read it just out of curiosity to see what happens.
Well, we want to thank Leslie Kagan because she's offered up 3 copies for a giveaway for us to read the sequel. And I know a lot of members enjoyed Whistling in the Dark and want to read Good Graces. So we want to thank her for that. It was really cool.
Very generous.
And, yeah, very generous. And thank her for answering our interview questions. I think it always really enhances our experience of the book when we interact with the author. And she's so funny, Leslie Kagan. I just crack up when I read her answers.
She was. I thought, well, I could see. I think she said in the question about she was a lot like Sally. And I think, yeah, she is a grown-up Sally. Maybe she has her own little...
I thought she said she and True had more in common.
Well,
She said she was like Sally, but she was the youngest. And the sister that was like True is older. And I'm thinking that's why True seemed a little bit more older and more less night, yeah, than Sally.
Probably.
Because she was based on an older sister. Or Sally,
right.
The author, Sal, you know, was the youngest one, but that's who she was more like.
Yeah, and I was wondering as I read why, you know, a question I had was, why is this from Sally's point of view? And the answer was because this was, you know, a huge deal that the man she loved and thought was her father was not her father. I thought that was really interesting.
It'd be difficult for anybody to deal with something like that being revealed to them, even when they were young, that... everything you thought was, you know, true isn't true.
Oh, and yeah, it was the fact that she had told her father she hated him or something just before they left.
And right. that she wished she had another dad.
Yeah, she wanted another dad. All that stuff that centered around that day and them leaving for that ball game, it was just so much. You know what I mean? That's what I was saying before, that it was like too many things. It's True caused the accident, the uncle's blackmailing the mom, she told her dad she hates him and wants another dad, and it just so happens that she actually has another dad.
And well, that put a lifetime of guilt on you. Probably
exactly.
have years of therapy.
Therapy.
Yeah. For both of them.
Sally.
How bad off was the uncle? Because, I mean, I know I was thinking he was pretty much
like
practically, yeah, but then he's doing stuff. So I didn't know if he recovered somewhat or just some minor brain damage where he can't.
He built birdhouses or something all day. He did something.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't anywhere close to normal anymore.
He wasn't like really bad off.
No, I mean, he could function.
Okay.
He wasn't going to be able to go out and live like a normal life with a job and all these other things.
He was definitely disabled. And
right.
I guess, you know, impaired to some extent.
Right.
But because all he did was sit home and build stuff. I don't remember if it was birdhouses or something that he built all day. And then the grandmother. I wonder about how come they didn't go live with her? I know they didn't like their Uncle Billy or whatever, but why couldn't they? She be their guardian while the mom was away? Or why wasn't she, you know, looking out for them a little bit more?
Why? Because she was 83.
Yeah, she was
oh,
old.
Oh, she was? Oh, okay.
Yeah, she was really too old to deal with little girls.
And
yeah.
almost pretty okay. much one foot in the grave anyway.
I missed that she was that old. Yeah,
yeah. Okay. There was one part, like, we have one grandma left, but she's almost dead anyway. She's about 83 years old.
I remember when they went over to her house and, you know, they're in the kitchen with her and I'm like, why isn't she looking out for them more?
I think she could barely look out for herself and you know, her disabled son. That was about all she could manage.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so any scenes you guys remember? Any other thoughts you have?
I kind of liked it when she sent that letter to Hall and was like, does your name stand for the holostosis or that bad breath disease?
I know. And the doctor, she kept mentioning how the doctor's breath was so bad. That was funny. And that letter was cute.
Yeah. But I know, I kind of like a little update, like, you know, Hal was sentenced to 30 years in prison or... Or maybe the idea of, like, why he hit somebody in the head with a beer bottle. I mean, was it
drunk.
Just a regular...
He was crazy. He was drunk.
Yeah, he was drunk.
But, I mean, was it... Well, because I had to go back, and I'm like, wait, maybe it was that woman he's fooling around with. Maybe it's her husband. I'm like, no, it's a different last name. So it's kind of like, you know, is it over a woman? Is it... Or just...
Well, yeah, there might have been more to that, but Sally wouldn't have been aware of it.
Yeah,
right.
That's true.
You know, so there may be more to it.
But I think it's just like a typical bar fight. People get in fight over ridiculous things.
And that's the impression I got, that it was just a drunken brawl or whatever.
Right.
And the man just happened to die, so now he's going to be charged with manslaughter or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the scene I remember most is when True stole her marshmallow sandwich. Whatever. I was so upset.
Poor Sally.
I felt it for Sally. I'm like, because, you know, wherever they got their sandwiches from, and True, you know, waxed hers in no time. And then Sally's eating hers and she's loving it and she's trying to savor it. And then this girl comes in and grabs it. I was like, oh no. I would have whooped her butt. And Sally just took everything in stride. She just let, you know, oh, I got to take care of True. And she just let True have her way.
Well, yeah, sometimes you have to pick your battles even when you're a kid.
Oh, and I liked it when True was fighting with that little boy over the Davy Crockett hat. And then Sally's like, yeah, we gotta get away with stuff because our mom's sick.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, they were, in that sense, they were your typical kids. And it was child's play, but I was so mad. And True just got on my nerves. She was so obnoxious.
True kind of reminded me of Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird.
A little bit, yeah.
Except but in To Kill a Mockingbird, Scout was the narrator of the story. But she kind of, I don't know, that kind of that real tomboyishness, toughness of Scout kind of remind me of True.
Yeah, we would need to get into True's head to see just exactly how she thinks. She did have that major breakdown at the end there, you know, when she finally opened up about, you know, and admitted to Sally that she had caused the accident by playing peekaboo with her dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, it really hit her. So at that point, I really started to see the other side to her. And that other side was like just her trying to be tough because, gosh, what a burden.
Yeah, yeah, she probably needs some therapy.
Yeah, she caused that accident. They both do. They really both need therapy. So, yeah, I guess I'm interested in Good Graces because I want to know where this dynamic goes. Because I see, you know, if things don't change, then True's just going to have Sally for lunch when they get older.
There'll always be this sibling rivalry.
Mm-hmm. And Sally's always going to be the weaker one.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious, too, because this, like, my mom was born in, my parents were born in 53, so I'd be, like, the offspring of of these kids.
Yeah,
so it's just kind of, in a way,
born in 56, so yeah.
But in a way, it was kind of weird, because I'm thinking, okay, this would be, like, my mom talking like this.
Exactly.
And my mom would not allow me to talk like that, so I can't picture my mom as a little girl talking like that and smoking cigarettes. And
oh, come on. Our parents did all those horrible things that they say they never did. Of course they did.
My mom,
exactly
like
that.
Well, yeah, they don't admit to it, though, but
exactly.
I think I got sick,
like,
and then
True
she started smoking
cigarettes like it was just second nature.
Yeah, I guess it just depends upon how you grew up. See, my parents don't smoke, so I didn't have access to cigarettes, so I never
did. It's sad when they start, when they unfortunately start that young, because then it becomes really hard to break it. And by the time they're a certain age, you can see on their face that they've smoked their whole lives.
Yeah.
Right.
It ages you and makes you look horrible. So,
well, they, as you said, they just didn't have a lot of supervision, so it was easy for them to be tempted by these things they thought were grown up or cool.
Yeah.
How did she even know how to light a cigarette? It's just...
Well, the other kids, you know, they had those other kids in the neighborhood.
That's true.
Who were up to no good, and, you know, Fast Sally or whatever, Susie or whatever her name was.
I think it was... Yeah, Fast Susie.
Fast Susie, yeah.
I think that was the Italian that they were eating dinner with, that the food was good.
Right.
Oh, and that's, I like the grandma part where she's beating on the grandson with the belt for making comments about the mother.
Yeah.
And people would do that back then. People could, you know, not that you want to have child abuse, but getting spanked or popped or something like that was a lot more common back then, and no one thought anything of it. That was just the way it was. But I said, but yeah, I mean, and the thing about the smoking too is now you don't see it, but back then, right before all the Surgeon General's warning, then smoking was just prevalent everywhere. It was in the movies. It was even on TV. You don't see anybody smoking on TV now, but it was just everywhere.
Yeah.
So people didn't think anything of it. Yeah, you didn't want a child to smoke when they were real young, that. But cigarettes were easy to come by, and the seeing someone smoking was just every place you looked. Well, I said I enjoyed the book overall, and I thought that it was a good commentary on a lot of different issues. Maybe too many issues, but a lot of different issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true, and it was a nice nostalgic look back to 1959 Midwest. So that's our take on Whistling in the Dark by Leslie Kagan, and we want to thank our listeners, as always, for listening. Please continue to leave us your comments, and stay tuned for next month's episode, where we'll be discussing Magnolia Wednesdays by Wendy Wax. And that is your pick, Roberta.
Yes, ma'am.
So we'll look forward to that. See you guys next month. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.